This is the Inland Journal. I'm Doug Nadvornik. Changes are coming to homeless shelters in Spokane. The city and charitable organizations are exploring new strategies to address homelessness. The House of Charity, Spokane's largest shelter, will reduce the number of people it sleeps beginning September 1st. Those beds won't be replaced until the city opens a new shelter in 9 months or so. Many social service advocates are concerned about what that will mean for homeless people this fall and winter. Spokane Public Radio's Jeremy Burnham reports.
Until January 2016, the House of Charity, operated by Catholic Charities and funded by the city of Spokane, sheltered 109 men at night. They all slept on the second floor of the two-story building. When the building was transformed into a 24/7 shelter, the first floor became not only a dining hall and social area, it also became a sleeping area, catering to men and women and their animals. The shelter essentially tripled its population to more than 300.
Over the last two winters, for the first time probably in the history of the city of Spokane, we basically slept everyone indoors. You would have a tough time in the last two winters finding homeless people sleeping outside at all.
Rob McCann is the president of Catholic Charities.
The staff became quickly overwhelmed, but also our block, our House of Charity block, and our neighbors who are business owners on that block really have been overwhelmed by just the number of people. There's a lot of people in this crowd, and that's a big burden. What's good for downtown Spokane and the Apple Store and the Riverfront Park Mall has been really challenging for our block and the House of Charity.
Heather Sly, the director of the House of Charity, gives me a tour. As we approach, a lot of people are loitering outside. This is a point of contention in the neighborhood. Sly acknowledges the complaints and hopes the police will start to help clear the area when it no longer operates 24/7. As we go inside, she shows me the area downstairs.
This is where the men sleep. So there's 70, 80 mats in here, and then we have women's mats in there and there and there. So this place is covered with people sleeping and a lot of snoring. So I think, and the building wasn't ever intended to be used that way.
But you're still going to have women down here.
We are. And that was our commitment, is that we did not want to displace the women.
The shelter will close during the afternoon for cleaning. At night, it will still house more than 100 men upstairs, but the men downstairs will be gone. Where they will go remains a point of contention. Kelly Keenan is Spokane's Director of Community, Housing, and Human Services Department. He says the reduction in capacity will be temporary because the city is opening a new shelter in July that will sleep over 100 people. This, however, leaves a 9-month gap.
What we've learned kind of over the last 20 months is that concentrating that number of people that are facing very difficult circumstances in one place is not a healthy and dignified solution.
But the fact is, the city will lose around 100 shelter beds for a 9-month period, including during the coldest time of the year. Keenan says the city will still operate warming centers during the coldest nights. And there are other shelters with room, but they are not low-barrier shelters where anybody is welcome. The Union Gospel Mission, for example, has stricter requirements, including a commitment to sobriety. Phil Altmeyer is the executive director.
When you have homeless people where addiction is one of the number one reasons that a lot of them are homeless, and they're trying to change their lifestyle and get some help, it's pretty hard to break those addictive behaviors when you put someone that's trying to stop with someone who's still using. So we've chosen to be the shelters in town that are for those people that want life change and want help, and we're there for them.
McCann sees it differently.
Are we worried that the people that are drinking are going to incentivize the ones who are not drinking to fall off the wagon? We've never seen that. In fact, what we see is the exact opposite. What we see is people in the building rally around that one guy who can't stop drinking and help support him to stop.
Even after the changes, the House of Charity will remain low barrier.
It's about serving human beings. I don't care where you're from. I don't care what your religion is. I don't care what your sexual orientation is. I don't care what your nationality is. You're welcome at Catholic Charities, and we're going to serve you every time.
House of Charity Director Heather Sly says her staff is communicating with people staying at the shelter to help make the transition go as smoothly as possible. I'm Jeremy Burnham reporting.
Many of those who stay in shelters at night live during the day on the streets. Some are in and out of housing. That was the case for Spokane resident Fitz Fitzpatrick. Fitzpatrick works as a political organizer, as a server in a local restaurant, and as a performance poet. Fitzpatrick talked with us recently about living in poverty in Spokane.
Since I turned 18, I've been homeless three different times for completely unexpected reasons. You know, I didn't see it coming. It wasn't like I had been using drugs and lost my housing or something like that. You know, I had a situation with my parents and then I went through breakups and suddenly found myself without a home. And it took me one time 6 months to find a job, and I couldn't get housing without a job. So I was just couch surfing. And I felt so hopeless and so depersonalized by what I experienced. I just didn't feel very, very human anymore. And after going through that, I just don't want anyone else to experience that. And I know homeless folks in this city are. I managed to avoid the streets. I'm really lucky. I grew up middle class. I have a lot of friends. So a lot of people were really generous in offering their couches, so which is so much better than sleeping outside, but also in some ways weirdly not. Because they're at the end of the day, you still don't have your own space, you still don't have a bed, you're still, whether you're borrowing space from a sidewalk or from someone's house, it's still borrowed, it's still not yours, which was one of the hardest things for me, to go from having a whole space of my own to having a sleeping bag and one coffee cup and a toothbrush. I felt my IQ literally drop during the experience. I couldn't concentrate. Just filling out job applications was difficult. My attention span was totally shot because you're basically in survival mode all the time. I'm thinking about, where is food going to come from? Where am I sleeping tonight? Are the people that I'm staying with, are they sick of me? Do I have to look for another place? What am I going to do with my cat? These very tangible things. And so for a while, I kind of felt stupid because I was why can't I just get out of this? Why can't I concentrate? You know, I went through another period of unemployment this year, but having stable housing, and I got out of it right away. It made such a huge difference to come home to stability. And I felt like I could concentrate this time, and I could get through it, and I knew what to do. Having to sell myself to an employer when I, you know, didn't even have my own shower, I just kind of felt worthless. I think I've definitely evolved. The biggest thing for me was getting adequate mental health treatment. I suffered from PTSD and bipolar disorder, and my bipolar was undiagnosed and didn't really come out until the stress of being homeless and then trying to find a job really triggered a full-blown real episode, and it took months to diagnose. So for me, having my Medicaid was so important. I couldn't afford to pay co-pays to my therapist. And because I have Medicaid, I was able to get into an intensive outpatient program, and that changed my life. And if I didn't have Medicaid, I wouldn't have found that program, and I might literally be dead. This year, I turned 26, so I'll lose my dad's health insurance, and then I could lose my Medicaid, too. So I kind of don't know what's going to happen after that. I'm doing really well with coping skills, but I have a mental disorder that requires medication. I cannot survive without medication at this point in my life. Yeah, and I can't imagine if I were on the street with this disorder and didn't have meds. It's no wonder why folks on the street are the way they are, basically.
That's Fitzpatrick talking about struggling to make a living in Spokane. Fitzpatrick was active this year in the Spokane edition of the National Poor People's Campaign. This week, Spokane County Public Defenders began using a new app that allows them to text their clients about upcoming court dates. On the surface, it's a very small thing. But if you're a defense attorney waiting for a client in the courtroom with an impatient judge, it would be nice to have that ability to send a "where are you" text. And from the client's point of view, it would be nice to have a communication link in case something goes wrong. So the most immediate goal is to keep defendants from missing hearings and avoid being arrested on charges of failure to appear in court. The bigger picture goal is to reduce the number of inmates in the jail, thereby lowering costs. On Tuesday, Jacob Sills explained his firm's new app to the county public defenders who will be using it. Sills is the CEO of a Silicon Valley company called Upstart. He pulls out his phone and starts scrolling to show us what the app looks like.
It's basically like texting people from your phone, where you can look at all your clients, you can send them messages, or you can look at who's missed court and you could send them a message, or you can look at who has court dates coming up. It's sending reminders, but then also facilitating two-way messaging. To be honest, if you had infinite social service professionals, social workers, they could do a lot of the work we do. But with, you know, county budgets being tight, there's an opportunity to use modern technology to take every public defender that already cares deeply about their client's well-being and allow them to be a social worker to some extent as well.
This software is in use in some California counties, in Baltimore and Richmond, Virginia. Spokane is the first venue in Washington. The county is paying $40,000 to use it.
Everyone, especially probably if you're a judge prosecutor, you've watched a few episodes of Law and Order or something, and you've assumed people are absconding and going to Idaho or, you know, flying to Canada, et cetera, et cetera. When in reality, if most of the defendants can't afford an attorney, they also don't have much money for housing, food. And so what we found was, by and large, most of the people missing court are not going anywhere. They're staying within Spokane County. They didn't show up to court because they didn't receive a reminder. They didn't show up to court because they forgot, because they're trying to figure out 9 million things and they were told 30 days ago and they don't have an office to put their forms on.
So he says a timely reminder using a technology that many people already have might be exactly what they need. The client doesn't need to download the app. He or she can simply opt into the program and receive messages from their attorney. Public defender Tom Krasminski expects as many as 10,000 people will receive the service during the first year.
It should reduce a lot of court time in making sure these warrants are signed, put into the system, prosecutor and public defender time with communication back and forth about missed court dates.
And there's a second benefit.
When the client is screened and provides their phone number and is told they're going to receive text messages, there's going to be a couple of questions in terms of needs. For example, transportation, child care, maybe a reminder to notify your work that you need some time off. So when they receive the text reminder, it could say, and by the way, you know, there's drop-off child care available at the courthouse. Don't forget, arrive 30 minutes earlier. Here's the location for that.
The new system had its first success this week. Krasminski says one of his attorneys texted a client on Monday to find out why they didn't show for a court date and learned that person is in the hospital. He shared that with the prosecutor's office and the judge, and no arrest warrant was issued. The phrase, "there's an app for that," has become one of the newest cliches in America. Applications on our smartphones provide all kinds of useful services, says Spokane entrepreneur Olga Berry.
App is life right now, in our generation, if you will. It's a new convenience, if you will. It's a new interaction, it's a new connection of any aspect of life, either social, business, financial. Apps is everything.
It's no surprise that Olga and her wife Mavis are developing an app they call Find Grounds. We met one morning recently on the patio of What Else, a coffee shop, where Olga explained the motivation behind their app.
It would have been nice if I could have walked in and I could have picked up my coffee this morning before we sat down, but I had to wait. It was a 5-minute process, you know, between waiting, like the three people that were ahead of me, ordering, and then fixing it up the way I would like it if that was my preference.
They thought, there should be an app for this. So they set out to create one where a customer could order coffee ahead of time using her phone.
They can either do a quick order, meaning where they will literally message what they want if they already know what they want, or they'll be able to go through a menu of a coffee shop of what they're offering and order through that way.
Now, creating apps is not the day job for either Olga or Mavis. Olga works in the Department of Biology at Eastern Washington University. Mavis is an interior designer. So they sought help from Startup Spokane and Michael Ebinger at Washington State University's Center for Innovation.
They started as a order by phone liquor business, and they realized because of the permitting and liabilities and all of that stuff that they really weren't going to succeed at that.
So they adjusted.
They saw Starbucks that does their ordering, but only in Starbucks stores. And Olga and Mavis both said, well, why don't we do this for anybody, any coffee store, any coffee shop. And I think they're kind of repivoting a little bit right at the moment to think about maybe those coffee shops that have drive-in windows are the best place to go.
Ebinger has helped them identify who their customers will be and where their revenue will come from. And he's helped them with what he calls a value proposition.
They want to bring high-quality coffee to most consumers without a wait.
With all of that determined, Olga and Mavis started the hard work of physically creating the app. Mavis Berry said they decided on the division of labor.
She does the coding part aspect right now, and then I kind of jump in and then review it, do the grammar check, do the layout aspect of it, make sure everything is functioning properly.
Ideally, someone with more coding skills would be doing this, but that would cost a lot of money, which they don't have. The Berries are in the process of looking for investors willing to front them the money so they can finish developing the app. Otherwise, they'll get to do the work. And then Olga says there's also the work of courting coffee shops who might pay money to be included in the app.
We've received a lot of interest. So the anxious point of getting it done, that's where the pressure is coming in, is getting it coded, getting out, and basically building an MVP right now.
MVP is minimum viable product.
So we can have a few customers try it out, spin it, break it, so we can make it better.
Such is the work of budding entrepreneurs. Olga Berry said she and Mavis are working long hours to develop their idea, but they knew going in it would take that. They're confident that coffee drinkers will soon be using their app to get their cuppa without standing in line. Now, as we bid adieu to the smoke, at least for now, we finish with two smoke-related stories. In the first, our Steve Jackson wondered how the particulates in the air have been affecting our feathered friends. He found a researcher in Seattle who's been working on that very thing.
Birds have a unique way of breathing, much different than the way that mammals breathe. Olivia Sanderfoot is a National Science Foundation graduate research fellow at the University of Washington in Seattle who's working on how air pollution affects birds. She explains their breathing system allows them to take in more oxygen per unit of air than humans do, something that helps in part for them to breathe at higher altitudes.
They actually breathe unidirectionally. They breathe in a continuous loop, and they utilize a system of air sacs to do this. You can kind of think of them as acting like bellows.
Sanderfoot says there are very few scientific papers published that examine how birds react to air pollution, including smoke. Much of the current knowledge comes from field studies, case studies in veterinary medicine, and poultry studies.
For example, we know that smoke causes thermal and chemical damage to avian lung tissue and increases avian risk of infection and increases the bird's susceptibility to infection. We also know that smoke might compromise the ability of birds to escape during wildfire. They could become trapped due to the presence of thick smoke.
She says her research is looking more specifically at how various levels of pollution, like smoke, will impact birds. She's seeking grant funding for one study to look at how birds move when reacting to a wildfire. She says there have been no studies on how wildfire smoke affects wild birds. Sanderfoot says she's also actively looking for any anecdotal information that birders may have on unusual sightings of birds or their activities in areas near wildfires. You can contact her at the University of Washington at oliviavs@uw.edu. I'm Steve Jackson reporting.
In Ashland, Oregon, where smoke from Southern Oregon and Northern California wildfires has been polluting the air, people are finding ways to stay safe and to make fashion statements at the same time. April Ehrlich reports from Jefferson Public Radio.
A grayish-orange tinge has hung over Southern Oregon for more than a month. Wearing smoke-filtering masks has become part of the norm. But in recent weeks, people have gotten tired of wearing the plain white paper masks every day. Instead, they're investing in nicer ones made of fabric, and some even have artsy designs.
So it's just a black medical mask, and it has a zipper across it, and then the zipper at the end hanging down.
That's Noah Traylor, who is visiting Ashland from Weed, California.
It's like super, really, really smoky right now. And I skate to work. So I decided to just find a couple of masks, and I'm really about fashion, so I decided to get a couple of these. So I really like this one.
The mask trailer bought online has the N95 rating, which means it filters 95% of the super small particles that can cause lung problems. It also fits his style. This particular design reminded him of an anime character.
It's called Tokyo Ghoul, and this guy has a mask, and it kind of has, it's like low-key resembles this one. So I just thought it was tight, so you know, I copped it.
Other people want a mask that is more comfortable, like Eileen Weinberg, who I met in front of the Ashland Co-op. She wanted something that was easy to put on and take off.
My neighbor friend got it for me. She came over with hers, and she got it on the internet. And funnily enough, it comes from England.
In addition to an N95 filter, her cloth mask has an attractive plaid design, which she showed to her friend nearby.
People say, oh, designer mask, and I feel a little shy. I didn't mean to get a designer one.
Back on the street, Mary Kyman says she specifically sought out her designer mask. Her mask is purple and gray and has skulls on it.
If you have to wear this all the time, why not look good? Once a fashionista, always a fashionista.
I spoke to several people, and I still couldn't find a shop that sold artsy N95 masks. Everyone seems to find them online. But hardware stores do keep heavy-duty masks in stock.
Well, we carry the RZ reusable masks.
That's Josh Holub of the Ashland Hardware Store.
We carry them in a neon green and a black color. They do go rather quick, and a lot of people are seeking them now, so they're very popular.
That's because these masks can filter out almost all of those tiny smoke particles. For some people, buying these masks is a necessity.
I'm still doing bad.
Danae Wilkin has to wear two different kinds of masks, a heavy-duty one when she's outside and a lighter mask when she's indoors. I had to meet her inside an art gallery before she could talk.
Seems like it's going to go on forever, and I just get headaches and nausea and coughing a lot.
Wilkins says she has sensitive lungs. The smoke also bothered her last summer when it covered the Rogue Valley for several weeks. People like her are staying indoors. They're canceling outdoor events. They're going somewhere that isn't smoky. And while local businesses might have taken a hit from the smoke, there's at least one marketing opportunity on the horizon: selling more effective and attractive face masks. I'm April Ehrlich reporting.
Inland Journal is in the air or on the air every Thursday, telling stories and talking with people in the Inland Northwest. If you missed part of the program or just want to hear a segment again, you can listen online anytime at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thank you for your support and thank you for listening. I'm Doug Nadvornik. Mm-hmm.